You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of February 4th, 2015, and it's time for a tragic podcast this week.
This podcast is a disaster.
Oh, goodness. Hey everybody, just a quick reminder, we forgot to mention we are playing Earthbound. We mentioned it last week.
Yep.
We'll actually be talking about it next week.
Next
Scott,
week.
Where are we getting to in Earthbound if people want to play along?
We are getting to peaceful, restful valley, which is where Happy Happy Village is. Remember I had a hard time talking about
yes,
that last
week? Yes, that's why.
I'm pretty sure I figured it out, and that's the proper name for it now.
Okay, we have a place,
yeah.
We have a time.
Yeah.
Next week. Happy, happy village town.
Yeah. In the meantime, say fuzzy pickles. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
And I'm George Albor.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It's a serious but not humorless conversation about video games. And it's always kind of hard to find humor in disaster.
It is. Real tough.
That's what we're going to find today. All kinds of hilarious things. Wagons turning over. Oxen drowning in the river. people dying of dysentery.
Constantly.
We're talking a little bit about Oregon Trail, but it's because we found an article by Maddie Myers from Paste. It's called Romanticizing Tragedy, Should Disaster Games Be Fun? And she opens her article with an anecdote about how she used to play Oregon Trail, like most of us, when we probably should have been learning how to type or something in school.
I feel like Oregon Trail was pretty foundational for my like appreciation of history and politics and stuff.
It kind of feels like I don't want to call it an accident because that feels disrespectful, but it almost feels accidental in how influential it was, but yeah. Also how good of a game it was.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
It wasn't like, remember like Math Blaster and other like shitty like educational
games?
Don't
you dare talk bad about Math Blaster.
The only reason I'm passably good at fractions is because of... But I mean, it's one of those games where even today, like we still see the influence of it, but it's also was like, oh, it's rooted in the historical realities of some settlers that, yeah. You know, went out west. But anyway, she talks about how it feels to encounter disasters in those games, whether it's someone dying of cholera or whether it's your wagon tipping over. When bad things happen to people in games, it elicits certain feelings, and there's plenty of other games out there now that are doing this.
Yeah. It's funny that Oregon Trail is her example, and she cites, naming them after crushes and things like that.
Yeah.
When I named characters in Oregon Trail, it was always my friends, and I always thought it was hilarious that they were dying of dysentery. Like, there's something comical about taking people in a modern setting and putting them in that past setting.
Yeah.
In a way that kind of really undermines the sense of tragedy in Oregon Trail. Like, it would have been more effective if there was, like, a minor backstory to these characters and you couldn't name them, right?
I mean, if it was, when someone falls off the wagon, then you see the little gravestone or whatever, and it's like, here lies Butt. Died of drowning. Yeah. But, I mean, that is the thing that I think allows kids to buy into that. Like, she was saying how she was pretty reserved and quiet as a kid, and so she constructed these elaborate scenarios, and you felt kind of an ownership over the people,
right.
You know, a responsibility over them. And she uses that as a way to get into some of the more modern games that tie into this feeling of what it is to like have disasters in games or tragedies in games. One of the main ones she talks about is This War of Mine, which I've watched a few videos of. Like, I've watched several hours of people mm-hmm. playing videos, but I haven't gotten a chance to play it yet, but it seems like something that we would actually like quite a bit.
Yeah, it's definitely high on my list. I definitely need to go back and play it, especially after reading Maddie's article.
Yeah. So we thought we'd take the article as an opportunity to talk about tragedy and disaster in games. And I want to start off with, I like this genre. I like the idea of disasters. like it's a disaster.
That's 'cause you're a monster, Scott.
But I mean, it's so descriptive of what happens in a game like Oregon Trail. Like, everything's going along just fine. Mm-hmm. Oh God, our wheel's now broken and we ran out of food.
Well, so you're talking about the sort of experiential disaster.
Yeah.
Like, as you're doing it, something terrible happens.
Yeah, yeah.
Could you say that that's that's in a lot of games that aren't tragic, though. Like, that experience might be in Metroid Prime or in Mario or something. Like, there's certain been, like, tragic, comical four-player experiences in games like that. Like, at what point is something disastrous that it becomes tragic?
I feel like...
Like, if I accidentally delete my, like, an item, is that a tragedy?
It was a disaster when my Rogue Legacy save somehow got corrupted and was wiped away.
Ugh, yeah, that's rough.
But I think that is how I define it. Mm-hmm. In something like Shadow of Mordor, which I've recently finished playing, I rarely felt like anything disastrous happened because it could always be undone or at least fixed.
Right. Yeah, there's something about, and, you know, Maddie talks about it in her article as well, but there's something about having no good come of your decisions that I think is punctuates tragedy.
Yeah.
Like, there's just nothing good out of it. There's no risks and reward. There isn't like, oh, you got killed in this level, but it's okay because now when you go kill this boss, he's going to drop the loot or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Dark Souls is actually somewhat like that. When you fail to get back to your dropped goods.
Yeah, I mean, it is disastrous. There's no fixing it. Sometimes it's unexpected. Like, that's, again, there's a lot of interpretations and connotations that go along with it, but for me, it almost captures this roguelike trait to it. And Oregon Trail is kind of like that. I mean, like, there's no bringing people back from the dead. Like, zombie settlers come
Oregon
back.
Oregon Trail,
like,
too.
I mean, there's something about the...
Do you want the banker or the necromancer?
Pause back. Oh, God, pause back.
You're, like, shooting buffalo and zombies at the same time?
I mean, I think there's something about the permanence.
There is a zombie Oregon Trail, by the way.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah. I think we might have even played that for, like, a Halloween. Like... I think it's called, like, Zombie Trail or something like that.
Probably. But,
I mean, the permanence of that and the unexpected nature of it that is still understandable once you see it. It's like, oh, my axle broke. Like, I understand that is the thing that could happen. It's hard to plan for, and it's unexpected, but it is still within the realms of... what I expect out of this world.
Yeah, you know? the unexpected nature of it in a world where you know that the unexpected is likely to happen.
I mean, it's even our own worlds. Natural disasters. Every single year, certain states in America are blown to bits by tornadoes.
Yep.
Like, it happens every single year without fail.
Shouldn't live there, guys.
I mean,
it's just saying.
And it is a disaster because it's hard to predict, but you know that it is a possibility of living there.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of where I make my interpretation of it.
When we're talking about something like this War of Mine, which is about the siege of Sarajevo.
Or at least inspired by it.
Is it not technically...
It's not technically... It's vague as to what it is, and I've actually read some fascinating articles where it's... People who were in the siege were saying, you know, my experience has been people never stole from each other. That would be the worst thing you could possibly do to people. It was a much less isolated thing and a much more community-driven thing.
Okay, yeah. I'm going to have some things to say about that. I didn't actually know that it wasn't specific to this experience.
Yeah, it's definitely inspired by, but I think they leave some parts of it vague.
Gosh, yeah, that's weird. Okay, interesting stuff. Well, so the reason I bring it up, though, is... I wanted to know if you thought Valiant Hearts counted in this sort of genre.
Yeah.
Because I don't think Valiant Hearts is full of tragedy that happens to you or you create necessarily. I mean, it does exist, but usually it's like between cutscenes, so it sort of feels removed in a way that Oregon Trail doesn't or Dark Souls doesn't.
I don't
know about this War of Mine, but I mean, there is a tragedy to the war depicted in Valiant Hearts.
Yeah. I think that's where it would probably do us well to make some sort of distinction, because when I think about it, and also this War of Mine, they're mechanics-driven games in that there's an overarching narrative, but not in the same way that Valiant Hearts follows one set of characters and the plot points are predetermined, whereas something like Oregon Trail or this War of Mine is much more procedural, and so the disasters in a certain way, they might be less poetic, but they are more random and more chaotic, and in that way they're a different type of horrifying, whereas like the disasters in this War of Mine are very literary that doesn't mean they're bad. It's like the various sieges that you go through are just as horrible, but it doesn't have the same feeling as something that you are that is an unknown. Like, right. there's some sort of solace in the fact that this is a scripted event, because mm-hmm. humans are telling it rather than some cold, unfeeling universe telling it to.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Another game I would toss into there is, of course, The Walking Dead. You know, yeah. there are moments that you can sometimes see ahead, like, oh, I'm going to have to choose this guy or this lady or whatever. Yeah. You know, the classic example, spoiler alert for season one of The Walking Dead, episode 3, when Carly gets shot.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nothing you can do about that.
Yeah.
There's no choice. There's nothing waiting for you. And that is just purely tragic. And then your option is leave this person behind or take her with you. And neither of them are like a good a good scenario you find yourself in. So that's another tough one where it's like, it's definitely a tragedy. I think there's something different about, you know, The Walking Dead, where you know these individuals. Oregon Trail, where you bring 4-6 people with you, and probably half of them will die along the trip. Like, there's almost like a special tragedy in the way that you become inured to death in Oregon Trail, and even to some extent The Walking Dead in like a future season, right? Like, at some point everyone you know from season one is basically dead, and it's just sort of what happens now in this world. But you know, in the Syria, well, not the Syria, the Syria game, in this War of Mine, it's like a greater tragedy. You don't know these people. It isn't like some person that you know. You're just steeped in a gross, terrible environment.
Yeah, and you're banding together, and you have to determine how much you invest in those people.
Right.
I think the example of The Walking Dead that you just pointed out is more like that, because you're at that point in the game, at least I was, trying to be the role that Maddie was talking about in
the hero.
Yeah, you're being the caretaker, theoretically, of these people, and then it brings into sharp relief that you'll not be able to save everyone.
Yeah.
It's not possible for you to make everyone come out a happy camper in this situation.
God damn it, I can try.
Yeah, and you can try, and I think that's where a lot of the power of that comes from, because you want to do right by these people.
Right.
But there's, in this case, you're kind of fated to fail. Whereas in the other case, there might be situations where maybe you shouldn't have forded the river there. You know, maybe you should have gone around. Maybe, like, there's a lot of different questions.
The fording the river example is a good one. And it's so weird talking about Oregon Trail like it's super serious, because literally I never took Oregon Trail seriously from that perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
But there is something powerful about a tragedy happening because of your decision. Mm. Yes, you didn't decide that there would be a fucking river here, right? But you decided that I'm going to risk it, and that risk didn't pay off, and you lost someone, or you lost an ox or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, when the decision is made by you, but the environment is determined by somebody else, like, that's the rough stuff. Mm. And I think that's why probably this War of Mine sounds like it's an effective experience, because you're in a war-torn environment, but you must make the decisions. If you're going to steal from someone, you're going to steal from someone.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're doing it to survive, right? I mean, it's the same thing in... And I would argue that Papers, Please probably is also
I was just going to talk about that,
Because you're making these decisions that are affecting these people's lives, but it's so easy to say you have a choice when you don't have a choice. Like, you do technically have a choice. I can let someone in, but my family might die if I do that.
Yeah.
That is not a comfortable place to be, and disaster scenarios in the real world create structures like that all of the time, where you have to make a decision, and it's rough.
Yeah. Maddie pointed out in her article some games that this War of Mine was a place where she kind of drew the line. Like, it made her feel so uncomfortable. Yeah, right. And she was saying that, you know, there's a lot of games where you face tragedy and disaster, and she even talked about things like StarCraft. You know, there's a sense of, like, borderline masochistic engagements is how she described it.
When I see that, like, Zerg rush coming, I know I have made a terrible mistake.
When I know that I need more Vespene gas. Damn and it. I cannot...
I need more pylons.
But I wonder if... And it got me thinking, like, not for her line, but, like, personally for mine or yours, like, why is something like... What pushes you over the edge? What makes it too uncomfortable? Like, is it something as simple as these little tiny alien dudes are not as... like, thematically resonant as this realistically rendered human-looking person? Like, is that what makes it more uncomfortable? Is there, like, a mechanical thing? Like, where is the line, you know?
I don't know if I've seen or crossed that line yet. Like, yeah. For me, in terms of consuming any media, like movies or whatever, the line is usually around things that are very gory. Like, it's a visual choice, right? Yeah. Something that I feel like glorifies it in a way.
Mm.
But I'm not against, you know, participating in those experiences when I know they're going to be rough.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Because, like, if you think about a lot of those games, like, is it... How much... does the fact that the Apple II's pixelated graphics make it difficult to see a person visually and you have to imagine that, right, versus this War of Mine where you actually, they're rendered in an almost photorealistic way. You can kind of see how gaunt they are. You can see if they're sick. Like how much, it, you know, is it something as simple, and this isn't a bad thing, but is it something as simple as visuals creating empathy that can affect it?
You mean in my case?
In anyone's. Like, maybe in your case specifically, but like, how much does that play in, do you think, with when people are reacting to this?
I mean, I think it definitely visuals matter for sure, right? I mean, when you see someone and you know what? Here's a good example, right? Have you seen that movie Waltz with Bashir?
No, but I have heard, right. I know of it.
So it's like, it's a gorgeous animated film about this guy that's basically dealing with with trauma. Mm. He was an Israeli soldier and he, participated in what was a slaughter basically of Palestinian citizens. Yeah. And the whole film is animated and you empathize with this guy. And, you know, you feel for the sort of trauma that he underwent, and even more so you feel for the people that suffered because of both him and the fellow soldiers that were there during that slaughter.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the very end of the film, when he's, like, really confronting what was happening and remembering, it stops being animated and just shows pictures, like actual real-life pictures of just violence and gore and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird because I think to some extent the whole film is like, it doesn't need to be super graphic or realistic to empathize, right? There's all of these scenes, in fact, that maybe even make us empathize more because it allows it to be magical and almost more of like an impressionist painting, right? Like, I can get at the tragedy of the scenario because the animation lets me get closer than even a picture could.
To the emotions rather than the first off, like, physical reaction.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And especially for the main character's emotions.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes time to shock you, to, like, really make you confront that, it's super effective that it is a purely realistic visual thing.
Mm.
So there's, like, a sort of time and a place, right? It's what type of empathy you want to create, what type of experience you want to make based upon the art style that you want to use, right? Mm. I think you can make something that's super pixelated and really emotionally tragic and effective, but you're going to be doing it in a different way than, say, you know, the sort of graphic confrontation of the gaunt figures or, you know, the actual physical devastation that something like a war or violence has on people.
Mm. I was thinking about, I mean, this is like the classic example of, you know, Jason Rohr's Passage or something versus something like This War of Mine, where it shows those people explicitly. How about the scale? Like, do you ever find tragedy in something like, I mean, it doesn't couch it like this, but in something like SimCity or Civilization, like when a massive disaster happens, you know, like is there something about the individualized tragedy that connects you closer to it?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, this is something that people have talked about a lot, right? Like, it is really hard to understand the weight of 6 million deaths.
Mm.
You know, like, how do you understand the true tragedy that was something like a genocide?
Yeah.
You sort of have to understand it through small individual stories.
Right.
Because the weight of that scale is just too crushing.
Mm.
At the same time, though, like, there are things that you can only experience with that scale.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. It's like, again, I think it's probably just different types of tragedy. I think for the individual, for sure, like, it's going to help if you have that individual story or narrative or connection with people.
Yeah.
But at the same time, again, losing somebody in The Walking Dead is different than losing, you know, or being confronted with something as atrocious as a large-scale disaster.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking about what it means to either be alone or with other characters.
Right.
And it's also, I think it's, you know, I'm not trying to, like, criticize Maddie's reaction to these things, but I think comparing something like StarCraft to something like This War of Mine, or even Oregon Trail, really, is somewhat of a strange comparison, because the level of abstraction and the level of personal interaction you have with the characters in StarCraft, like, they are fodder, right? Like, it's masochistic because you will face disastrous results from your choices, but you won't experience the tragedy of those disasters,
right?
Because those characters were never developed.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
And that's where things like, I mean, I think there is a lot of overlap here, but when it comes to roguelikes, but without the character development, you probably don't have as much tragedy.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, if you think about like something like Minecraft or any of like it's so like these
survival. Well, usually you're murdering me in Spelunky and stuff. So.
Well, these survival simulators are so disaster focused. Like, right. That's the fun of these things. Like, what was the one we played where we were in the snow? The Long Dark.
Whether
it's The Long Dark or DayZ or Minecraft, like, all of these games, the reason why people play them is not because they're easy and things go perfectly all the time. Like, the reason why people play them is because they're disastrous.
Yeah.
It's like, whoops, I dropped my last stick and now I won't have fire tonight.
Yeah.
Like, uh-oh.
I mean, I think there's a joy in experiencing through somebody else's eyes overcoming of a tragedy, yeah. Right? And Manny talks about that too, with Oregon Trail in particular. But
yeah.
You know, I think a good one is, I mean, again, we're outside of games here, but that film 127 Hours, mm-hmm. about the guy who chops his own arm off, right? Like, the reason that's compelling is because we imagine ourselves in that scenario and we ask whether or not we could overcome that tragedy. Mm-hmm. Like, The Long Dark is best when we barely survive, or we wonder. And we project ourselves and go, yeah, maybe I could survive. Maybe I could find let's be honest, I would not survive. But
we get eaten by wolves like that one time we played the game.
Yeah. But, you know, if you find like a canned beans or something, you know, that is your momentary respite from the tragedy.
Yeah.
That's like the moment that you feel like, okay, maybe I can overcome this. And human beings are amazing, versatile creatures, and we're super good at surviving and super, even despite how much people suffer from PTSD, we're pretty amazing at dealing with tragedy and loss.
Yeah.
And to like engage in that type of experience in games, I think, is a way to sort of stretch our legs, get comfortable with it, experience it, and find the moments of transcendence. It's a little bit harder for things like This War of Mine, where maybe there isn't like a good ending or answer. In which case, I still think there's something valuable in it, in the act of experiencing it and sort of working your way through it, right?
Yeah. Well, and that's, I think that goes back to the core of the second part of the article, which is how do we describe these games in terms of language? Like, we always talk about fun. It's like, okay, well, like, it's not really fun going through this siege where people are starving and stealing from each other, blah, blah, but it's still an experience that Maddie and most other people were glad that they had.
Right.
And I think this kind of goes back to an old conversation that comes up every once in a while, which is like the F word in video games.
Right.
You know, what does that mean to say fun?
Oh, fun. Okay.
Yeah.
So, I thought you were talking about the F word.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, we often use the word compelling.
Yeah.
To be perfectly honest, I think that's probably a bit of a cop out, because if you ask someone to define, well, what does compelling mean? Like, well, I don't really have a good answer for you.
Yeah.
I keep going, but fuck, dude, I play slot machines at the casino and that's compelling. Does playing a slot machine and playing This War of Mine have something similar?
Yeah.
Maybe, but I don't want to make that connection publicly,
right.
At least.
Yeah.
So maybe compelling isn't a great answer. I think interesting or like, you know,
things can be rewarding. That's what I like saying.
Rewarding is a good way of exploring it. Yeah.
I mean,
and again, the reward can be different.
Yeah.
But there's something rewarding in the exploration of those systems.
The reward can be the understanding, whether it's the survival thing or whether it's knowing, you know, whether it's the one-on-one character tragedy, like Joel and Ellie from The Last of Us or something.
Right.
Or whether it's the systemic reward of understanding what it means to be in a survival situation, or what it means to make a slight tweak in your tax rate in SimCity and all of a sudden everyone is out of a job.
Right.
You know, like that sort of thing is not necessarily fun because you may have just destroyed all of your work, but the meta experience of understanding why you did that is the value, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I would definitely agree with that.
The valuable side of tragedy.
Another good example of a tragedy game, There was a game called Inside the Haiti Earthquake, and it was a Canadian, like, sort of choose-your-own-adventure game that I ended up writing about a long time ago, and that uses actual pictures of the actual disaster in Haiti.
Like, yeah, they visited
there, and it's told from three different perspectives, a journalist, a survivor, and I think an aid worker. Totally a tragedy game, absolutely. There are decisions that you have to make where you watch people in front of you go hungry in order to achieve some greater good.
Yeah.
And that's really tough. That's, like, really tragic. And it is a real-life tragedy, right? But at the same time, what's rewarding about that experience is that you get an exploration of a real-world experience in a way you can never actually get, right? Mm-hmm. I can't both be a photographer and a aid worker and a survivor of an experience at the same time. So the perspective you get by engaging in all three is totally unique.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that has to be something valuable and important to play, even if it's not fun.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is where it's funny. Before we... Inside baseball. Before we record the podcast, George and I were talking about a lot of, like, baseball, football. We talked about our sponsored by Mexican avocados spots on the Super Bowl. We were also talking about the whole, like, you know, formalism argument in games. And I think this is where, you know, if you were to reskin this War of Mine with, you know, set it in a grade school where people or kids are, like, bickering over candy or something and they're stuck in detention. It's like a lot of the mechanics would still be the same, but the themes cue your brain into thinking about the mechanics in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And, like, just appealing to people to not be, to not look at something at either sides of this argument. It's not, there's no sides of this argument, right? Like, appealing to people, like, there's no exclusivity here. Like, these things are intrinsically tied to each other.
Right.
Like, a disaster game for me is kind of like Spelunky, but it's quirky and it's cute, it's cartoonish. If this were about people, you know, navigating the rubble after the Haiti earthquake, it would have essentially the same mechanics, because if you fall too far, you'll die, and if you impale yourself on a spike, you'll die. But the way that you present it with the themes and the artwork would completely change whether I considered Spelunky a tragedy or just a disaster game.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, 100%. And, you know, on top of that, too, I was kind of shocked when you told me that this War of Mine does not specifically mention Sarajevo.
I don't think it, again, I haven't played it.
Yeah, I haven't played it either, so maybe we're talking out of our ass. But
I'm
really
pretty sure it doesn't.
Sincerely hope that it does, because I think that in some way, to remove yourself from that scenario and say, oh, this isn't that, is a bit of a cop-out as well.
I mean, it might be a mechanical thing, right? Like, maybe if the evidence suggests that people were more communal than isolationists and they didn't steal from each other, then maybe you wouldn't have as...
Well, maybe you shouldn't be telling that story then.
I guess, but I mean, it that's the thing. Like, I mean, if people are you morally obligated to avoid the thematic trappings, like the aesthetic trappings, if, you know, it's too close to something and you need to change the mechanics too much?
I don't know. I mean, like, the whole Bosnian Yugoslavia conflict is super interesting, right? Yeah. That siege lasted like 3.5 years.
Yeah.
Some people stole, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Also, I'm definitely sure some people didn't. Most people probably didn't steal. Because living in an area, you cannot leave the city for 3.5 years.
Right. If you piss someone off, you're going to see them again.
Right.
Yeah.
All of that stuff, like, we don't need to invent tragedy, right? Mm. There is a tragedy there. Mm. And I think one of the difficult things for me when thinking about the design of tragedy games in particular and trying to make them and focusing on this tragedy is that there is no tragedy that is not also punctuated in some way, shape, or form by something that I wouldn't define as tragic, right? Like, even in Yugoslavia, at the height of the bombings and the siege of Sarajevo, there are also things that people are doing that are inspiring and hopeful, right? Like, I don't think I can look at any example where I can't see in some way, shape, or form something hopeful even amidst that tragedy. Mm. So to have something that's so deeply tragic, maybe you're actually doing a disservice and undermining the effect of your sort of tragic story, right? By not naming it, by not having some counterpoint to that tragedy in a way.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is, and again, this is another appeal for people to kind of, you know, step across the aisle in this argument of, like, mechanics and aesthetics. But I think that example is why it's important to look at bias in a serious way, not in, like, oh, you like Xbox, but, like, what is your like, you know, what is your motivation for making this,
right?
And what are you trying to get across? Because nothing is purely mechanical.
Yeah.
Like, it's built, if it's built by humans, there is some sort of bias in it, no matter what.
Yeah, and, you know, the other important thing about both that, about bias, as well as about constructing a tragic story around an actual event, is, like, you know, one of the reasons I think it's important to play these types of games, even if they're not quote-unquote fun, is because that is a process that we can avoid because we're privileged having not lived through that tragedy.
Yeah. Right?
Like, people in Yugoslavia today are still dealing with the repercussions of that conflict. Yeah. And, you know, the UN tribunal... you know, arrested a bunch of people, and there's a reconciliation committee that's still trying to overcome the tragedy. Mm. And there are people on one side of the line who say, let's ignore the past. Let's move on. Let's pretend this didn't happen. I don't want a tribunal here. I don't want a reconciliation committee because that just refreshes old wounds, and they've only now started to heal. Whereas other people say, we can never have this actually heal. We'll always have these scars unless we confront these tragedies. Mm. So, like, having that... The experience of confronting a tragedy in that digital space is a rare, safe space to do that. Mm. And if we sell ourselves short, if we remove it from the actual context, if we don't do a good job exploring or revealing our biases, then we're missing out on that opportunity of actually confronting that thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this conversation mainly has made me realize that I should probably really play this war of mine.
Yeah, same here.
Also, that I should find some, you know, Flash version of Oregon Trail and play that again, too.
Yes.
to see if I was just an unfeeling monster as a child.
I'm just going to name all the characters Slobodan Milosevic and intentionally drown them.
I think we'll leave it there for now, and, you know, invite people to write in with their thoughts and comments. experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is our website. We are fording the river of the internet.
Oh, everybody, yeah.
Come on down. Leave us a review. It helps us survive. You are the buffalo.
Come watch the slow motion tragedy that is our journey across the internet.
Oh, gosh.
Until next time, everyone, thank you for listening. We'll be talking to you next week.
So long.